Hello and welcome back to yet another episode of the VCpreneur podcast, a podcast that provides a unique perspective of the startup world through the lens of venture capitalists and entrepreneurs. I'm your host Digjay, and today I have with me Raja Ganpati, founding partner at Spring Marketing Capital, which is a skin in the game marketing capital firm that is partnering with founders to build the brands of tomorrow. Spring Marketing has worked with companies like Byju's, Cars24, Cred, Wakefit, Purple, among others. Raja has worked with founders for most of his working life of 24 plus years, first with Ogilvy and Brand David, and later as CMO with Sequoia India, before starting Spring Marketing Capital with his co-founders Arun and Vineet. In today's episode, Raja talks about his background and path to venture capital, the gap in the marketing ecosystem, and how Spring Marketing Capital aims to plug that using a skin in the game model, importance of articulating the founder's vision and how it impacts product roadmap, the brand, as well as the culture of a startup, his experience working as a CMO at Sequoia India, and how new age VC firms can build a strong brand to attract founders. Raja shares his experience of working closely with founders and helps us look at startups through a branding and marketing lens. I had a great time talking to Raja, and I hope you enjoy this conversation too. So without much ado, let's jump in and listen to what Raja has to share. Welcome, Raja. Welcome to the VCpreneur podcast. Very excited to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Digjay. Thanks for hosting me.
No, absolutely. It's a pleasure. And let's start off with a brief background about yourself. Tell us, how did you end up in the world of venture capital? And, you know, walk us through that path.
Sure. Actually, ended up in the world of venture capital in a very circuitous manner. I don't think I can ever ask anyone to follow my path. I began, my first job was actually with Ogilvy, the communications company. I spent a decade with them in various roles, including at some point being part of the leadership team of their second agency as well. Then moved to retail banking, where I was CMO of Deutsche Bank when Deutsche launched retail in India. And then in a completely unexplainable set of events, I then went and joined Sequoia Capital. This was in 2008, when the VC ecosystem, I think, in India was still in very early days. So I was super privileged. I think that was the best decade of my career. It was a phenomenal learning experience. Sequoia, of course, is a very well-known brand today. I was privileged to see the journey in that 10 and a half years, not just of Sequoia as a firm, but also of the VC industry in India. The way I think the newer kind of companies that came up, the focus shifting towards technology, the whole adoption of the digital ecosystem. And that really, in a sense, brought me to where I am today, which is the simplest way of saying it is that I've tried to marry, I think, different aspects of my last 25 years into what we are doing at Spring today. So there's a little bit of investments, there's a little bit of marketing, there's a little bit of advertising. There is a lot of working with founders. There is a lot of core marketing thinking that we are trying to build. So it's a unique place. We are a marketing value-added investment fund. So we co-invest with VCs in Series A and Series Bs and offer our marketing expertise as part of the investment. That's really the model that we are building out. It's pretty, I don't think anything like this exists anywhere in the world. It brings its own set of challenges whenever you are the first person trying to do something. But it's been an exhilarating couple of years. We opened doors on January 1 of 2019. And 24 months later, I don't think I would want to do anything else for the rest of my life.
Awesome. I think that's amazing background and, you know, amazing journey to chart out a path to venture capital from marketing, being a CMO and now working, you know, with your own fund. And I want to tap into, you know, some specifics, including, you know, your experience with Sequoia and, of course, Spring Marketing. But before we do that, I want to talk about the genesis of the idea and, you know, the why behind starting Spring Marketing itself. You know, what was the problem statement or the gap that you identified, you know, which you're trying to solve through Spring Marketing today?
Sure. I think that will be a slightly longish answer because there are two parts to the answer. The why and how of how we got here, which is to some extent a chronological answer and a bit of a story, and the philosophical reason why we are doing what we are doing. Let me start with the logistics. So about 6 or 7 years back when I was at Sequoia, I started working with Kunal Shah when he was building his first company, which is FreeCharge, and ended up doing almost like a deep consulting assignment with him and his team. Learned a lot. And during that process, we actually decided to go to market with a campaign. We did market research. I think that was probably among the first set of marketing conversations in that company. In that process, I also met my current founder, Arun Iyer, and we really connected. Arun was chairman and chief creative officer of Lowe, the advertising agency, a veteran. He's been in advertising for 20 years now, And together we created the go-to-market campaign for FreeCharge. And in about 6 months' time, FreeCharge got sold. And I think this sparked off a series of similar assignments, consulting type assignments within the portfolio. I ended up working with many consumer-facing companies. And ended up working again multiple times with Arun on companies like Practo, Farsos, Byju's. And of course, Byju's being a huge inspiration for what we are doing today. During this journey, I also met my third partner, Vineet. Vineet was a founder of 22 Feet, which he sold to the Omnicom Group. And then he became the CEO of the acquiring entity, DDB Mudra. And Vineet and I ended up working together on digital marketing for a bunch of Sequoia portfolio companies, including HealthCart and Bounce. In a way, I mean, Arun and Vineet knew each other because they're part of the same industry. And in a way, the three of us kind of really connected on a very fundamental principle, which is that the brands of tomorrow will have to be built very differently from the brands of yesterday. And in spite of being on the wrong side of the age barrier for between when we are discussing yesterday and tomorrow, we still felt that we have the ability as a unit between the three of us, we have the skill sets, the experience to actually work with founders and build the brands of tomorrow. And that's really the genesis of where the idea of Spring came from. Frankly, the model when we began thinking about it or talking about it over weekends was not exactly what we launched. But like all good things, you know, it evolved over a period of time and finally we decided to do what we are doing today. And that's really the chronological way in which Spring came into being. On the philosophical side, and I think this also is the second part of your question, which is why are we doing what we're doing and what's that big gap? I think the big gap we see in the marketing ecosystem is a lack of long-term alignment between the agencies or the marketing companies and the founders. I think the entire marketing industry has been built for large companies, for multinationals, for companies with large budgets, which is why, you know, in some ways, marketing companies make money when companies spend money. It's almost as if, you know, it's a vestige of the commission system where they take a percentage of the marketing spend. So if you spend more money, they demand more money. If you spend less money, they demand less money. And we just felt it's completely wrong alignment. And surprisingly, you know, this is a model that's been existing for decades. And I really think this is a model that is going to be severely questioned in the years to come. It's already getting questioned. And somewhere in that space, I think we felt, fine, I mean, the larger companies, the multinationals might be able to manage this. But we felt that founders are looking for a different solution. And that's really the crux of what we do at Spring. The one phrase that comes to mind is skin in the game. We believe that if you have skin in the game, if you work with a company as an insider, then you have long-term alignment. You're able to make significant impact on the company and the brand. You end up working as insiders and not outsiders. And that's something that we strive to do all the time. Because, you know, external recommendations and external solutions are really good only to a certain extent. But once you become an insider in a company's journey, then your ability to positively impact the journey improves. At least that was our hypothesis. So the philosophical answer for why we are doing what we're doing is we believe in skin in the game. We believe that once we become insiders in a company's journey, we can significantly and positively impact its future.
Got it. And, you know, it kind of answers one more question that I was going to ask is how do you fundamentally differ from, you know, a regular ad agency, which, you know, founders or even big brands hire today? So, you know, definitely a very unique model.
Actually, since you raised it, Digjay, maybe I should add to this because fundamentally, you know, the one thing that we decided early on is that we will not be an ad agency. And it's not to say that ad agencies are not great or there's some fantastic people working there. Many of our friends work there. You know, we want all of them to succeed. Some of them are super creative outfits. You know, we see some of their campaigns and say, wow, I mean, we wish we had done that. So there's a lot of good talent there. And the problem, frankly, it's you know, it's a different model and our model is very different. And I explained to you the philosophical reason why it's different. Secondly, even as a business model, what we have tried to do actually is build a team that spans the spectrum of marketing services. And we're still building it. So, you know, today, for example, we have the ability to work with a founder and go from strategic advisory to digital marketing solutions, to branded content, to television campaigns, to website and app development, and so on. Then look, we are also evolving, right? I mean, it's early days for us.
Yeah.
And we will continue to evolve by finding people from different parts of the marketing spectrum. So we have somebody who's ex-McKinsey in our team. We have an ex-investment banker. We have UI UX folks. We have a head of branded content who comes from the alcohol industry. We have designers, we have copywriters. So we have people who are coming from different categories with different experiences. And that's super critical for us. Because we also believe that if you don't bring people from different categories, then you risk in advertising and marketing becoming very insular. So that's something else that we are trying to do, of making sure that when we work with a founder, we don't go into the meeting saying, this is what we are good at. It's not about us at all. We try and go in saying, hey, what's the problem that we need to solve for you? And if you don't have a resource for that problem, then either we will bring a resource on board or we'll point you in a different direction. Because the answer to your problem cannot be just basis my skill set or basis my strength, right? And that's a challenge. For example, there are agencies who are fantastic at making television campaigns, but you know they're probably only good at that. The difference between founder-led companies and very large companies, which have big teams, is that I think the founder is looking to find the solution. He's asking you the question saying, should I go mass media? How much money should I spend? Should I do it on television or should I do it on digital? At what point of time does it end for me to start expanding my markets? Now, these are fundamental questions, which I don't know if you're an advertising agency making TV campaigns, you can answer them. And maybe they're not meant to answer those questions. We are trying to answer. Because I think if you're working with founders, and this again is a learning that all of us had during our earlier stints, you know this, you work with founders, you met them, you interview them all the time. I think it's a completely different ballgame. And my view is, I think that's one of the early decisions we took to focus on founder-led businesses, which in a way has dictated a lot of the kind of firm that Spring is trying to be.
I think it's a classic first principles approach, if I would say, because you're not trying to, mold the campaign or mold the solution basis your skill set, but just, fundamentally trying to listen to what the founder has to say, the questions coming in and the requirements, and accordingly, present the solutions you have. So that's fantastic. And definitely, like you said, a first of a kind model. And talking about, VC funds, starting a VC fund for a first time fund manager is not easy. And this is not just a first time fund, but it's a fund with a completely new VC model, the skin in the game model with the marketing lens. So, what was your pitch to your LPs and what convinced them to, back you and your team to embark on this journey?
Yeah. So you forgot to add that a month after we started fundraising, I think we were hit with the biggest pandemic the globe has ever seen, just to make matters more interesting. But I would say that, the pitch to the LP has been exactly what you just heard from me. It's been skin in the game. It's been a desire to work with founders to build the brands of tomorrow. It's a strong belief that we have the necessary skill sets and the necessary experience to make a difference. It's a belief that the world is changing so rapidly and consumer habits and attitudes are changing so rapidly, driven by digital preferences, that you need to be more dynamic in your approach towards brand building. That's what we're trying to do. I mean, we start by saying we don't know. We are also learning along with the founders during the journey, right? We don't try to be experts who come in and tell you what to do. We want to be people who come and partner with you and try and help build this brand together. So the pitch to the LPs is exactly what you heard in the last 20 minutes. And I think the reception has been frankly phenomenal. And I think I'm super grateful that in a year like this, we managed to complete our first investment a month back. So I would say there are two or three different types of LPs, right? There are LPs who know us from before, and hence there is a lot of positive goodwill. Again, super grateful for that. People who want to see us succeed, people who believe in us, people who wanted to give us a helping hand, and they managed to, kind of push us along. That's one group. The second group is people actually we've never met before, but who really like the idea, who believe that something like this is required. And our LPs are a good mix of both kinds of people, folks who know us, who like the idea, and people who've never seen us before. Many of them we have not met because, these have all been Zoom calls. So we have really not met in the real world. And like I said, we're super grateful that people have chosen to believe in us and have chosen to believe in the model and have given us a great start.
Awesome. I mean, it's very surprising, and kudos to you guys on, doing what you have done in such a short time, because people can spend months and years, just raising their funds and, before even they start the cycle. So you guys are already there. And I want to talk more about Spring Marketing specifically now. Tell us about the thesis and, the typical check size that you try to put per investment.
Sure. So we actually call ourselves Spring Marketing Capital, and that's very deliberate. So we've been trying to figure out a name for ourselves and a descriptor for what we do. We actually realized that this model doesn't exist. And so we've, you know, like good branding folks, we decided to invent it for ourselves. And that's where the term marketing capital came in. In a sense, you know, we constantly remind everyone we work with, whether it's LPs, founders, portfolio companies, we keep telling them, look, we are not VC firms. We're not a venture capitalist, because that's a very different model and our model is very different. That's why the whole term marketing capital, because we're investing backed with marketing expertise and marketing experience. The thesis is very simple. So we want to invest 1 to 3 million type checks, not less than 1 million, not more than 3 million in series A's or series B's, along with leading VCs of the country. So many of the VCs today who invest in consumer are now well known to us, they're partners, they introduce us to entrepreneurs and companies, they work with us pretty closely. And that's the relationship that we want to build, we want to continue building. So VCs, I think, see a big spectrum of companies, they invest in a smaller group, we want to invest in a much smaller group. So we will end up making 15 to 20 investments during the life cycle of our fund over the next 3 to 3.5 years. What kind of companies do we want to invest in? We obviously invest in consumer companies. We want to invest in companies where technology definitely plays a role, either in building a superior product and or in accessing better distribution systems and or ability and willingness to build a brand online. We strongly believe in the power of digital. So it's unlikely that we will invest in a pure non-digital offering. You know, I've been enough in the VC category, never give you strong yeses and nos, because you never know what's going to come along. You have to be prepared, you have to keep your minds open. But it's unlikely that we will ever invest in an offering that does not have a digital angle to it. So we strongly believe in the power of digital. We believe that that's what's going to accelerate growth of consumer companies in the future. So that's who we are and that's what we are trying to do.
Awesome, man. I want to specifically talk about the brand campaigns and the life cycles, you know, the actual tools that you use when you're working with startups. So could you unpack the process and, you know, steps involved when you're working with a startup on its marketing strategies and ad campaigns? How do you, you know, tackle it when you first meet the founder?
Yeah, I think first we approach it with humility. See, every category that we work with tends to be unique, right? So obviously we don't work in a category where we are conflicted. So today, for example, if you're working with 20 companies, that's 20 different categories. That's number one. Number two, because we are working with new age companies, we are working with new age founders, it's likely that that product is also first of its kind. Or if not first of its kind, it's early enough in that particular service or product. I think our first step is really humility. We walk in saying we know absolutely nothing about your product or your company or your category. And it's likely that we will probably never know as much as the founder and the management team. You know, I think so. We begin always with a healthy dose of humility. And then we spend the first few weeks in a discovery process. So we try our best to immerse ourselves into the category, into the company. We speak to consumers. We speak to the founder. We speak to the management team. And we try not to solution immediately. So the idea is to not jump into a solution, not jump into a recommendation. Because I think that's always, you know, you may get it right, but then you're doing it with far less knowledge. That's point number one. Point number two is that this is going to sound fairly disgraceful, I think, but almost all the solutions actually exist inside the company. I strongly believe that. Like the founders we work with are among the smartest people I've ever met in my life. And I genuinely mean that. They've created something that just did not exist before they came onto the scene. They're super smart at figuring out growth hacks. They have all the answers. The teams that we work with have all the answers. Many times our job is to ask the right questions. And the reason we are able to do it is because we all come with having done this many times before in related categories, working on brands of different sizes and shapes. And so we are able to ask the right questions. We are able to tease out the right answers. Many a time, you know, when we come up finally with an idea or a solution, I have frequently had the founder saying, oh my God, that's exactly what I used to think about. And that's great. That's music to my ears. We're not here to give them a solution that they can, you know, they've never imagined. Our job is actually to figure out the core consumer proposition from within what the company is already doing. More often than not, because the founder does not have marketing experience or has never done this before, you know, they come up with a great product, they take it to market, they hack their way to the first stage of growth. And then usually we come on board and many a time the first marketing conversation in the company happens with us. Once our discovery process is complete, Our job really is to understand the founder's vision. It is to understand the consumer insight in the category. It is to understand the product promise. And then, A, identify the consumer proposition and help articulate it in an inspiring manner. Inspiring both internally for the company and inspiring for the consumers in the category. And then the solution process is the last step. So once we have alignment on that consumer proposition step is when we get into solutioning. What I've realized is this is such an important step in the life of a company. If we get it right, and if we get it right early on, it's not just about what follows from a solutions perspective. What also happens is the proposition creates a framework for the company to operate in. What products do I launch next? What kind of features do I build? You know, where should I focus my team's energies? All actually come from this framework. And we've seen it many times before. There are companies where we worked with which have multiple products. And one of the biggest challenges for the founder is, now what should I do? Should I have different brand names? Should I have the same brand name? Should I have different? How do I manage these verticals? But will consumers of X vertical buy something from Y? And these are very fundamental questions. And unless you are able to figure out the core consumer proposition that your product or your service or your company is offering, I think all these questions cannot be answered. But once you answer these questions, the ability for you to build a large business out of it becomes far higher because now you're focused. Best example of this is there was this company called Pratap Snacks, which I was involved with for about 7 years, along with my ex-colleague, P.T. Bharadwaj and GV. And we worked very closely with this company. And I still feel that the fundamental difference I made to this company was we started working when this company was about 200 crores. It finally IPO'd at roughly about 1,000 crores of revenue. And I still believe that the fundamental difference I made was that in that when the company was 200 crores, managed to convince everybody that we should just have one brand called Yellow Diamond. All the products should be launched under that one brand. And there was a logic for it. There was reasons for it. But it ensured that by the time the company IPO'd, it was one very large brand with lots of synergies between the different products. Now, the answers are not same for all companies, right? But getting this thinking right, to me, this is the core of what we do in our work. And I really cannot overemphasize the importance of this for a founder-led company. Lots of future mistakes can be avoided if you can get this thinking right. And then when it comes to the solution, we actually try and say, hey, what is the best solution for the problem at hand? For example, last year we were working on a company where we completed the discovery process. We agreed on the consumer proposition with the founder. And then he said, okay, shall we launch the marketing campaign? And we said, no, let's fix your website first. Because it's a bit like, you know, you have a home and you're calling people into your house. You want to fix your house before you start calling people in. So we said, don't spend any money till we are convinced together as a group that this is the most optimal version of your website. We actually spent a couple of months building the website together with the product team and then started working on the marketing campaign.
You touched upon a couple of very interesting points. One was, you know, how it affects the internal culture and the way, you know, the company starts thinking about itself and how it wants to grow. You know, leaving aside the impact it will have on its consumers and the growth of the brand externally. Just speaking to that, how do you think having a clear marketing lens and a clear proposition helps build a strong culture for the team itself at the very early stages?
Oh, absolutely. And I think a lot of the work we do actually translates into internal culture documents as well. And I'll tell you the single reason for this. The single reason for this is that the founder's vision is always an integral part of the work we do. I don't think there is a single piece of work that we've done in the last 24 months where the founder's vision was not a part of the chart. Now, you're not going to find that in a multinational company, right? There's no founder's vision. You know, the brand framework has been created by a bunch of professionals, and I'm sure they're, you know, doing a handsome job. But I'll tell you the difference, and I'll tell you why we have chosen to work in this category and why I believe that the brands of tomorrow will be built by founders. Professionals come and go, and this is a harsh truth, right? I've been a professional myself, and they will come and go, and they will have short-term agendas. The head of India will have a different agenda. The head of Asia will have a different agenda. The head of Globe will have a different agenda. And they're all operating on, you know, a certain time period which they have in mind. A founder's agenda is actually completely limitless. He wants to change the world. He or she wants to change the world. And they want to build a brand forever. And what happens as a result of it is their vision tends to be broader in scope. And if you're able, and sometimes, you know, founders, we actually work hard with founders to get that vision articulated. Even that requires work. But once we get it right, what happens is, A, this becomes a much more long-term document for the company to follow. It becomes a long-term statement that everybody can buy. Secondly, you know, the best companies are those where lots of self-selection happens, starting from employees to co-founders to consumers. You know, a lot of it becomes inbound. And that happens because the company gets its culture thinking right. You know, everybody starts feeling I should actually, you know, when two products and services are the same, you realize that you are making unconscious choices. The best example I have is a company, you know, that I personally admire a lot globally, which is Airbnb. I mean, Airbnb's culture, you know, today touches even its consumer. I feel good about staying in an Airbnb. I feel good because the company has a very strong culture and has done a fantastic job of communicating its culture to all stakeholders. I believe that in a world where the world is becoming smaller and all of us are exposed to so much information, the kind of brand choices we make will start changing. You know, it's already evolving. It's already changing. We don't want to choose a brand whose founder we do not like. Why is that? I mean, 15 years back, you would have laughed at me if I were to suggest that I will not choose a brand where I don't like the founder. Today, it sounds like a fairly straightforward statement to make. Why should the consumer care about the founder's character, right? I mean, I don't think even consumers knew where these products were coming from, or they thought, okay, this is large, nameless, faceless organization. Today, consumers care. They want to know about ethics. They want to know if the company claims organic, they want to know, how can I believe you? Why should I believe you? And founders are increasingly having to step forward. And that's why it matters. That's why having a founder's vision clearly articulated matters. That's why having a strong ethical culture matters. Because, you know, in the world that we are moving into, you know, it's difficult to be a bad human being and a great founder of a great brand. It's very difficult to be that. And I'm thankful for that. Because I think consumers are becoming more and more discerning. And this is why it's super critical for us to get this framework right early on. We get it right. It creates a lot of inspiration. It creates a lot of energy within the company. And that energy starts going across, right? Even consumers get touched by that energy.
Yeah, the first and second order benefits, you know, building a classic brand. And like you said, you know, identifying that at the right moment probably is defining for the company itself to build that strong foundation to then, you know, keep scaling. You know, I had a small question. Not everyone has access to Spring Marketing Capital. Some startups, which are very early in their journey, they might not have the liberty to spend, you know, marketing dollars and might have to find organic ways to gain mindshare of their consumers and the kind of love that we're talking about in the mind of the consumers. So what should, you know, these early stage startups focus on to build that brand organically that resonates with their consumers, keeping in mind the capital constraints they have at the time?
Yeah, I strongly believe, and this is a very personal belief, so, you know, I could be wrong, of course, but just based on my experience, I think you should think about marketing in its classical sense, marketing and communication, a little later in the journey of the product. I strongly believe that the first order for any startup is to get its product right, and get its service right. Be in touch with your consumers, constantly evolve, innovate. So the best founders we work with are super product obsessed. So take Chaitanya and Ankit of Wakefit. They're super product obsessed. There have been instances where, you know, the product you're buying is probably version 13. It's insane. These guys, you know, even without consumer feedback, they're constantly trying to improve the product. Baiju, for example, is personally phenomenally product obsessed. So I don't know, not many people know this. He spent 3 hours in a Dubai mall selling a product because he wanted to figure out how consumers react for a particular sales pitch. And, you know, he came back with so much feedback. He came back with product feedback, because if you're not selling the product, then you probably don't know exactly how that product needs to be built, right? So I do believe that, you know, that product obsession at that early stage is what is required. I think branding, marketing, PR can follow a little later. I know this is, you know, this may not be what everybody thinks. Like I said, that's why the disclaimer right in the beginning, there's a very personal belief. I believe that there is a time for marketing. There's a time for building a brand. And it usually, that's the reason why we come in at that Series A. I believe that it takes, you know, for you to start investing, should you be aware of the product, the packaging? Suppose you're a, you know, if you're a food and beverage company, you should be aware of packaging. You may not have the dollars to hire very big designers, and that's okay. I think that's fine. I mean, because these things can be changed. The consumer is much more willing to accept change today. You can change your packaging, you know, when you're 50 crores or 100 crores of revenue. That's perfectly all right. I think anybody will mind, especially in online world, right? Especially for a D2C brand. I think it's okay. You have a direct channel of communication with your consumers. So I am not a big fan of spending marketing dollars very early on in the company's journey. I think there is a time for it. Of course, there is always a difference, you know, and there will always be an exception. For example, Vinnie Cosmetics will always be quoted as an example of a founder who actually spent in his first year, if I remember the numbers right, 100 crores of revenue, spent 100 crores of marketing spend. But look, he's a very one-of-a-kind entrepreneur. You know, he's done it before. He had a lot of belief in what he was doing. And I think initially he was self-funded. He was coming after it from his first venture. So very different set of circumstances. But I wouldn't recommend that someone else do that, right? I mean, it's horses for courses. It worked for him. It may not work for anybody else. But in my opinion, there is a time for marketing. Don't get in too early. In fact, sometimes I feel founders get distracted early on because they're worried about stuff like packaging. Hey, you know, what about communication? What about digital? You can do it with a small team, do it yourself. It is difficult. By the way, let me be very honest, Digya. It's not easy at all. It's difficult, especially finding marketing talent also tends to gravitate towards the larger companies, larger agencies, larger corporate shops. So it is a challenge finding talent in early stages. But I think the focus should not be on marketing early on. I think focus on marketing happens when, you know, you're very confident of your product market. You know your pricing, you know your distribution. Of course, you will keep evolving. Of course, you will keep chopping. But broadly, you know your core. And now you're saying, hey, how do I take this core to 5x more people? And that's where marketing comes in. To me, marketing is a growth hack.
I think that approach definitely makes sense. And I'm sure a lot of founders are listening to this will take this advice, especially at the early stage, by focusing more on the product and, you know, getting that product market fit early on, followed by marketing and the growth.
And to be honest, of course, you must be aware of brand and marketing. Of course, you must be aware. But look, most of these founders who manage to get connected to consumers have an instinctive sense of that. So like I said, you know, you may not be the best packaging possible because you may not be working with the best resources, but it'll be packaging that works for the stage of the company that you're in. And I think founders get that right more often than not. So just be aware of some of the principles around branding and marketing in early days. But, you know, there'll be a time to spend time and money on it a little later in the game. That's my belief.
Awesome. You know, I want to switch gears here and talk about brands in venture capital. And before we talk about VC funds specifically, you know, I wanted to go back to your time with Sequoia. Tell us, what were your top learnings, takeaways from that decadal experience with Sequoia? And why do you think, you know, founders love the Sequoia brand today, you know, be it anywhere in the world? What did Sequoia get right to get that founder love today?
Many things. I think not just in India, right? Globally, it's a phenomenal brand name. It's got great recognition, many, many successes. And I think it comes from clarity. I think Sequoia, the one thing I learned there is just to be very clear on who you are and what you wish to achieve. Sequoia has phenomenal clarity of thinking and vision. Starting from the top, starting from their founder, Don Valentine, then the next generation of leaders, which is Mike Moritz and Doug Leone, moving on to the India partners in this particular case, which is Shailendra, GV, Mohit. I think they have phenomenal clarity on who they are and what they want to do. And that's fantastic because that's the same clarity that they bring down to the thinking when it comes to working with portfolio. I was net beneficiary, I think, in that 10 and a half years. You know, I remember this really funny incident during an offsite where I was sitting at a dinner table and I was talking to my counterpart in the US, who was a CMO of the US team. And I was just talking to her about the work I do. And maybe I was a bit carried away, maybe a couple of more glasses of wine than not. I said, look, you know what? I actually get paid for earning here. I'm just learning. Every day is a learning experience for me and I just get paid for it. And Doug Leone was at my back. I didn't know. And he just tapped me on the shoulder and he said, we can fix that very, very easily. But it's true. I really think that was an amazing learning experience. There are many reasons for it. One, I was lucky to work in a firm like Sequoia. I was lucky to work with extraordinary people in India and the US. See them at close quarters, learn from them, observe the way they look at companies, the way they look at founders, the way they look at businesses. That was amazing. Secondly, Sequoia is one of the few VC firms who also invested in a lot of portfolio management talent. I was, again, a beneficiary. I mean, I was the first non-investment team member in India. And that was a big move by Sequoia to actually invest in operational resources who could help portfolio companies in their respective domains. That was a pretty far-seeing move. I joined in 08, like I said. I mean, still early days of the VC ecosystem. So that was great. Third is just a fantastic portfolio, right? I think all my exposure with founders is because of that 10 and a half years. I have worked with founders in the past, even during my advertising stint. But I think I saw founders from a very different perspective. Like I said, I mean, I learned the difference between being an insider and being an outsider. You know, when you are an insider in a company, I think, and this is where I think I learned about alignment, right? A founder in a company which I was meeting a founder, you know, she knew that I am there because I have the best interest of everybody at mind, right? You know, my advice, my recommendations, my suggestions have no other agenda to it. You know, I would also benefit if this company does well. And I think that unconsciously plays a big role in the kind of impact that you can have in the company. And really, I genuinely believe that, you know, when you see people, you can actually classify them as insiders and outsiders. If you have a different agenda, if they want the company to spend money, you know, then a founder will see through it. And if you really have no agenda, like one of the companies, Ambrish of Citrus Pay, the day he left Sequoia, I remember announcing it on Twitter. And I remember him replying saying, you know, thank you for all your contributions. And the one thing I will remember you for is stopping us from launching our consumer business. And I think that's the kind of thing that I will take away as, you know, having the fearlessness of a long-term alignment. You know, when you have long-term aligned, you're not fearful. You know, it's a bit like, you know, you will be far more honest with your wife, spouse, because you have long-term alignment. You're saying, look, this is forever. And it's, you know, if I have to tell you something honestly and if I have to tell you something bluntly, of course, I have to find the right way to do it. But I will tell you because, you know, that's the right way for us to grow together. I think that's again a big learning. I can go on and on. It was an amazing 10 and a half years. I ended up working with some fantastic founders, Baiju, Amrish, Kunal Shah, Samir of Healthcart, Shashank of Practo, Jaideep of Fasos. I mean, I can just go on. It was an amazing experience for me. And I think it gave me the platform for exposure, for learning, and in a way brought me to actually dream up Spring and think of an alternative model of investments where marketing expertise is part of the game.
You know, one question for new age VC firms, and, you know, as the ecosystem is evolving in India, we're seeing a lot more, you know, young new age VC funds popping up. What do they need to get right to build a strong institutional brand, you know, similar to the Sequoias and the Andreessen Horowitz of today?
I would say, you know, from my own experience of a decade plus in a VC firm, plus the last couple of years of being in Spring, I think value addition can no longer be it's not a buzzword anymore. And I think VCs have to figure it out. And like you correctly said, if you're a smaller VC and you don't have the resources that a Sequoia Capital can command, then you have to find smarter ways of adding value to your portfolio. And that really should be your number one question, because I think this is something that I used to hear a lot about when I first started working in Sequoia, which is, a time would come when founders will start selecting VCs, when, you know, capital starts becoming a commodity. And what happens? Why should the founder select you to be a part of the cap table? Now, this was a question that folks at Sequoia always agonized about. And I'm sure lots and lots of VC firms today are thinking about this question, right? If the founder were doing the selection, why should he elect you to become a part of the cap table? I think that's important. That's a very important question to answer. And look, we have answered this question for ourselves in a very different way. And every VC firm will find its own answers for how they bring value to the table. It may not all be the model of an Andreessen or a Sequoia, where they have large teams, where they have operational talent. Not everybody can afford it. And not everybody believes in it as well. I mean, there are other firms I know, very, very small firms, who believe in being small, who don't think that they should be carrying the operational heft on their side. They believe that they should help their portfolio companies build their expertise. And that's a very different model, right? And I think there's no one answer. But I've seen $100 million funds being super successful. I've seen $1 billion funds being successful. So I don't think there's a one answer. I think the question is, it's a bit like a brand, right? I think a VC firm today also needs to recognize that they're building a brand. And the same questions that they're probably asking their consumer founders is also relevant for them. Like, what's your core product? Why are you different from anybody else? I mean, these are questions that any VC would ask a consumer founder. We ask this question to ourselves, saying, why are we unique? Why should somebody want us in active? Why should a VC introduce a company to us? And I think we have to work harder every year to justify that answer. I mean, if we have to be in the cap table, because we are not the guys with the big bucks, we are never going to be able to beat any VC. And the intention is not that, right? So we want to be someone who gets invited into the cap table. And, you know, for that, we have to constantly answer that question, saying, who are we? Why do we exist? And why should the founder do this? And I think that's the number one question every VC will have to answer. Not surprisingly, we've received calls from a couple of VC firms to actually help build their brands. And I think it's a good thing. I think it's a recognition that, you know, VCs need to become a brand themselves. And being a brand is a good thing. You know, earlier, I remember VCs used to be pretty low profile. They used to be, you know, media shy. I think that needs to change. Founders need to know who you are.
Absolutely.
Because you're not just not some, you know, entity who's writing a check and you want to be involved in the company. You're attending board meetings. You want to grow along with the company. If you want to add value to the company, then the founders should know who you are. So I find that very interesting that there have been occasions where VCs have changed their identity, changed their name, and changed their logo. It's a good thing. It's recognition that VCs also have to build the brand.
And they're thinking about their customers, which are founders, you know, in a much more deeper way.
Absolutely.
This has been awesome, Raja. You know, with that, let's move on to our final segment, the rapid fire round. I'll shoot some questions and hope to get your, you know, honest opinions on the same.
Sure.
Okay. First question, one thing that you'd like to change to improve the state of the Indian startup ecosystem today?
I think a lot more optimism and positivity. I do worry that, you know, I think we can do with a lot more of that. I think founders in India face the toughest challenge, especially when you compare with US. And that's what we normally do, right? We look at the US and say, oh my God, look at the founders there. Look at the kind of businesses. Look at the market sizes. But hey, this is tough. This is a high friction market. It's difficult. I mean, a company gets to 100 crore, it's a celebration. In US, you're a 100 crore business. Nobody cares. But we should care here. I think it's good to celebrate founders. I think it's good to celebrate successes. Somehow, you know, we're very quick to pull companies down and say, oh, look at, everybody's going to make mistakes. The path from 0 to 100 is very different from 100 to 1,000 and 1,000 to 5,000. Companies will make mistakes. Come on, we all make mistakes in our life. I just feel give them a little extra benefit of doubt. If it's a founder-led business, give them some, you know, they will learn. They will all correct themselves. Just give them some little extra latitude because they're trying their best and it's not an easy market. I just feel this desire in certain sections of the ecosystem to very gleefully pull down people who make mistakes, I think is avoidable. My personal view. I would much rather, if you ask me, I'm more than happy to forgive a founder-led company when they make a mistake because I know how much founders obsess over their products and services and I think we should give them that extra benefit of doubt.
Absolutely agree with you on that. If you had to give a TED talk, what topic would you choose and why?
Oh my God. I really hope matters don't get there and I don't have to restrict myself onto an audience. But if I have a couple of extra minutes on this one, I'll actually want to answer this question in a little bit of detail. There's something sure. that I personally strongly believe in. And actually tell you a little story to kick this off. So there's this tourist who, you know, walks into a shop. And he sees that this is a shop that's filled to the brim with elephants. And these are all wooden elephants. And it takes him a minute to realize that every single elephant looks the same. It's identical. And it's almost machine made, but he sees that it's actually being hand carved by a guy who's sitting in the shop. So he goes to the carver and he says, how do you get every single elephant looking exactly the same? The carver says, hey, it's very simple. I just take a block of wood. Then I chop away everything that's not the elephant. And, you know, I heard this story when I was really young. I was just starting off my career. It was in some offsite. I don't remember the origins. I can't find it online anywhere. I don't remember who told me the story, but I heard it and it made a phenomenal impression. And a lot of how we've run Spring actually is in this philosophy, which is I genuinely believe that self-awareness is one of the biggest requirements, whether you're building a brand, whether you're building a business. And that self-awareness, you know, in marketing, a lot of time is spent actually figuring out what you are. But more often than not, nobody actually answers the question, what you are not. And I think we've done that. At Spring, if we have managed to get to where we've got, it's because as a partnership, we've constantly asked ourselves what we are not. And answering that question, or what we call answering the unspring, you know, what is Unspring actually gave us a far higher clarity on what is Spring. This is something that we even urge the founders that we work with to do. You know, just finding the bits of the wood which are not what you are is sometimes, especially in early days of the journey, super critical because you can't be all things to all people. And having that clarity on who you are comes from really sharply defining who you are not. And that's really something that I feel is not enough spoken about. Especially in the world of branding and marketing, everybody speaks about finding out who you are, positioning. And I love to speak about the space around you, you know, the space that you have decided not to occupy, the space where you say, look, this is not who I am. And it's okay. It's okay if customers don't work with me. For example, you alluded to it. We are a small team. We will remain small always. And we will only work with a certain set of curated brands. It does mean that we say no a lot and we respect it when somebody says no to us. And it's perfectly okay for us if people say no. And it's good because I think if you say no, that means you understood who we are and you don't think we are a great fit for you. And that's fine. You know, we don't have to work with everybody. We don't have to, you know, it's impossible to work with everyone. And if you try to work with everyone, your basic quality will suffer. Everything that you try to do will suffer. So really, I mean, if I were to ever spend a little more time and if I had a bit more time, I would actually think a lot more on this topic saying, how do you find out, how do you improve your self-awareness to find out what you're not? And yeah, that in the unfortunate event of being invited to do a TED, that's what I would speak about.
No, for sure. This is beautiful. And, you know, we look forward to that extended version of this talk whenever that happens. Last question, you know, any final thoughts for both, you know, current and aspiring founders who are listening to this podcast?
Just a lot of empathy, a lot of support. I mean, we are founders ourselves. We've gone through a very tough year, especially 2020 has been a monstrous year for everybody. It's been very tough mentally as well. It's not just about business, right? There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of loneliness. There is a lot of worry about business, about future, about teams. So my only message is, look, we are all in the same place. We are all struggling with a tough year. I think the year is ending in a far more optimistic manner, every which way, from a healthcare perspective, from an economy perspective. And that's really the only message I have, that we are all in this together. And, you know, if ever a founder feels lonely, he or she should just remember that, you know, there's millions of other people around the world who feel the same. And it's just a matter of time before this passes. And I think tomorrow is going to be far, far better than today was. That's the only message I have.
Awesome. Awesome. Raja, it's been an absolute pleasure, you know, to have you on the show. Thank you so much for, you know, sharing those insights with us. And, you know, hopefully we'll have you back on the show soon again.
Thank you. Thank you, Rikjay, for hosting me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the VC Bruna podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please let our guests know about it, share your thoughts on social media, and let them know what were your key takeaways. We would truly appreciate if you could subscribe to our podcast on the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a review on Apple iTunes. This will help others discover the podcast. To get insights and to learn more about startups and venture capital, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We will love to hear from you there. You can find all episodes together on our website, thevcpreneur.com. We will be back again next week with another VCpreneur that is making a dent in the venture universe. Until then, take care and keep shining.